Hello, and welcome to I Am The Egg Pod, with me, Chris Shaw. The Egg Pods take a jaunty stroll through Pepperland, discussing the Beatles and solo Beatle albums with a potpourri of delicious guests. We've got a new Beatles single. Whether you want to define it as a Beatles single or not, it's in their canon, it's the last track on the Blue Album, and I'm just keen to hear people's reactions. Basically, I just want to talk about it. It's incredible. We've got a new song. Gosh, the build-up to this has been astonishing. We had the documentary last night, which was incredible. Absolutely wonderful. I don't know if you watched the One Show, and it was just so good to hear. They interviewed Charlie Bisharey, who played violin on the track. This is aside from the actual video that we saw, which we've all seen, hopefully. And he was saying about the string section that he played with. They weren't actually told what the project was. I think he thought he was playing just for a Paul McCartney song, but they weren't actually told what it was for. So his reaction when he was actually watching it, just incredible. And they were recorded at Capitol Records in Los Angeles. A new footage for the video, directed by Peter Jackson. I think there was a previous episode where we were sort of saying, was it going to be Peter Jackson? Don't know. But yes, it is. He wasn't quite sure. He's done some great interviews saying he clearly wasn't sure what he was going to do. And then he was given footage by Paul Ringo, Rogue Best. Lovely Rogue Best. Rogue, get back to me about Pete, please. Obviously, Lennon and Harrison Estates. And interestingly, he was given footage, 14 hours, I think it was, of unused anthology footage. I'm not going to say any more about that, but watch this space. And the song itself, John recorded, as we all know, it's a demo now and then, recorded back in 77 in the Dakota, demo given to Paul, and George, Ringo and Paul did some overdubs for the anthology, wasn't used, George didn't like it. Whether it's about the song or the quality is up for dispute. I think a few people have sort of said that the story's been reinvented now. Who knows? Song's revival happened not as part of a great sort of campaign as such, but because Paul just wanted to play it with Ringo. It was just a conversation, should we do it? And they did. Giles Martin. Oh, Giles. Poor old Giles. Gosh, he's had to go through all the publicity and the promo for this. His mum passed away just a few days ago. So, you know, God bless you, Giles. You've done amazing. You've had to do this huge, and everybody's saying, talking about death and everything. Oh, it's incredible, really. But he was sort of emphasising it wasn't driven by marketing considerations. It was a sincere approach. Paul and Ringo just wanted to do it, and they did. And why not? They're Paul and Ringo. So the evolution of technology, particularly the use of machine learning, MAL, artificial intelligence, obviously played a pivotal role in all of this, in restoring the track. But the process involved extracting John's vocals from the recording. We all know about that. So it's not as scary, you know, this AI thing, it's not as scary. And I think anybody who watched the documentary, gosh, how good was that? I think the highlight for everybody was the moment where we heard John's solo isolated vocal. Oh, which was just so good. Haunting. It was just unbelievable hearing that voice. The song features John's vocals. Obviously supplemented, you've got elements from the 90s recording sessions. So that's got George's rhythm guitar. Paul and Ringo did their contributions last year. Paul's on the original. You can hear in the verse, you can hear Paul's voice from the 90s. And in the chorus, you can hear his voice from now. More of which later, because that's quite moving. And the slide guitar, played by Paul, in a very George way, deliberately. I'll just say it, I love it. In this episode, to celebrate the new single, I've asked lots of Egg Pod listeners to send in their thoughts. The song was actually 2 p.m. We all heard it on the 2nd of November, 2023. And some of these are literally straight after they've heard it. So these are wonderful initial reactions. Some have listened to it a few more times, but it's just fascinating. As well as that, we're going to be talking to Matt Everett, and there's some other little bits in there that might surprise you as well. Hope you enjoy.
Hi, Chris. It's currently 8 minutes past 2 on the 2nd of November. I'm on Blackpool Seafront in my car in the pouring rain. Pulled over at 2 o'clock on the dot to listen to Now and Then. And, yeah, I'm a bit shaken, to be honest. It's absolutely beautiful. Like, it's properly beautiful. And I think, you know, maybe it's just the emotion of the occasion, but it's definitely my favourite one of the three later years Beatle releases, you know, Freezer Bird, Real Love, and this. It's definitely my favourite one. I think as a song, it feels more complete. I think it's because maybe the sort of technological jiggery-pokery of it is less obvious because the technology has become more sophisticated. John Lennon sounds like John Lennon. He doesn't sound like a sort of heavily sort of synthesized robotic John Lennon. It sounds like John Lennon singing with the rest of the Beatles. It's absolutely beautiful. It's very simple, but very immediate, and there's just something about it. You know, obviously, you know, people who've heard the demo of it that's been going around, they know kind of what it's about, but it's only when you hear John accompanied by Paul singing, you know, I miss you, and I, you know, I miss you now and then. It's absolutely incredible. I've got, I know it's something that I'm going to be listening to time and time again over the coming rest of my life. But at the moment, I'm kind of shaken by how beautiful it is and how emotional it is. And, you know, is it a song that deserves to be the final Beatles song? I don't know, because what song does deserve to be that? You know what I mean? What song does deserve to be the tram going past there? What song does deserve to be the final song of that unbeatable musical legacy, if you like? But, you know, I mean, for years it was, you know, My Name, Look Up the Number, which I was always very, actually, you know, kind of in favour of that being the final one, because it kind of demystifies everything. But this just feels like an amazingly moving coda to, you know, the greatest musical phenomenon the world has ever known, or you know, will ever know. I just can't get over how affecting and effective it is. It's absolutely incredible. So I'm going to go and listen to it a few hundred more times, try and find some hot donuts and then listen to it all night. I can't believe it. I can't believe they've gifted this to the world. It seems like the world has done very little to deserve it lately. But, yeah. Anyway, I've got so much more to say on it. Thanks for letting me say even this. I'm going to be boring people to death talking about it for the next few weeks or so. Lovely to speak to you, Chris. Can't wait to hear what everybody else thinks of it. All the best.
Hi there, Chris. I'm Georgie, and I just wanted to share some thoughts about, you know, the incredible song and the incredible day yesterday. Just wow. It is everything I wanted it to be. I mean, I feel like the main thing I'm feeling is just pure emotion. I still can't listen to it all the way through without crying, which is my goal for today, is to get through it without the tears, because, you know, need to listen to it on the bus and at uni and stuff. But just wow. I mean, and what a moment. I listened to it on the radio when Radio 2 were doing the first play, and just to hear, you know, new music from the Beatles, especially because I was born in 2002, you know, John and George have not been with us my whole lifetime, and obviously there's been no Beatles, new Beatles song released in my lifetime. So just to have the final Beatles song that I can, you know, buy when it comes out, and I'll be able to tell my children and grandchildren that, you know, I was alive at university when the final Beatles song came out, is just amazing. And I just thought the tone was perfect. I mean, I know some people said, oh, it's a bit kind of downbeat, they wanted more of a kind of rocker, but I just think the melancholy yet kind of soaring tone is unbelievable, and I think it's captured so perfectly in the slide guitar solo. I mean, what a beautiful tribute to George. Obviously, it's a shame that it isn't him. I would have absolutely have loved it to be him, but I think Paul just did the most beautiful tribute. I mean, like Free as a Bird, but even to a greater extent, that solo just makes the song absolutely go into the stratosphere. And of course, incredible restoration of John's voice and the backing vocals from Because as well. It's just such a beautiful way for them all to be in it as well. And yeah, I just think it is so, so lovely. And I'm so happy that we've got it in our lives. And yeah, I'm looking forward to hear everyone else's thoughts. So thank you for doing this and bye.
Hello, Chris. Hello, everybody. It's Jeff Lloyd here. Happy Now and Then Day. I suppose, like a majority of people listening to this, I was just predisposed to like this record. I don't know what they could have done to disavow me of the notion that it's going to be good or have some merit. I think only if they'd have drifted into a cover version of the Horst Wessel song halfway through could I have been robbed of that. But what it's given us, I think, is so much more. I think it is a Beatles record that deserves its place in the body of work. It sounds like the Beatles, and it doesn't sound like the Beatles because it's a pastiche and they've contrived to make it sound like the Beatles. It sounds like them because there are four Beatles on it, and how could it not? And that is a wonderful thing. I think I was moved by it. I'm trying to think, like, the point at which I first got a little bit teary was actually surprisingly when present day Paul and present day Ringo come in on the backing vocals on the chorus. And I say surprisingly because I love Ringo. I love Ringo's voice. But I think what he offers is a man in the pub with a voice full of character who can hold a tune rather than an emotional heft. And yes, you know, I can hear some melancholy in the backing vocals of Carry That Weight or in Photograph in amongst the mix, but it's generally not what I'm looking for or expecting from Ringo, and yet there it was. So I got teary at that point. I think, like everybody else, I'd watched the film beforehand, the 12-minute film, and the spine-tingling moment is, of course, when you just hear John's restored voice, restored by that MAL technology from Peter Jackson's team. You just hear it there with nothing else in midair, and what a spine-tingling moment that is. I don't think that is the best cleanup on Now and Then. I think the single best example of the cleanup is the cleanup of George's opinion of the track, which is unrecognisable from what it was in the 90s, as far as I can tell. So congratulations to everybody involved in that. But you know, I just love it. I think the string arrangement is so tasteful. I know the Rob Sheffield piece said it's a bit Eleanor Rigby-ish. I thought the shades, and again, without it being a pastiche of I'm the Walrus in there, but I like the musical vocabulary to explain exactly what I mean by that. Maybe Chris can explain what I mean. But I thought Giles Martin did a fantastic job on that, and the whole thing, just generally the care that has been lavished on it, and it really does feel like it's been this labour of love at this point for Paul, I think, rather than just something he wanted to get out. I think there's been some kind of shift, maybe, in the, probably because the technology and the amount of attention and creativity they've been able to put into it, and it is just a success. I think it sits in the body of work really well. I think it really holds its own alongside Free as a Bird and Real Love, both of which I love. But I think the songwriting on this track, Now and Then, perhaps isn't as strong, but the production is just elevates it to a different level. Sorry, I'm a bit embarrassed that I just used the phrase to another level, but there you go. Yeah, it's wonderful. I'm so thrilled that we have it. We have a Beatles record in 2023, and we all get to hear it on the same day. What a fantastic thing. And also in the film, I was thrilled to hear Paul describe it as probably the last Beatles record, which just leaves the door open for Carnival of Light 2050. So happy Now and Then Day. What a thing that we get to experience this. And I am looking forward to hearing everybody else's reactions to the Peter Jackson video tomorrow. All right, Chris, bye.
Hi, Chris and fellow egg podders. This is Gail Ramage, or Mealy Garage, on various social media outlets. So my thoughts on Now and Then. I can't really put into words, but just not ideal for this, but I'll try to. I think the song is beautiful and heartbreaking, sad and very emotional. Just when you think over the history of the Beatles, what they went through, those four lads from Liverpool, what they gave to the world, the loss of John and then George, part of that unique connection is gone. And for me, this song encapsulates just everything about the Beatles. It's a final doffing of the cap to such a legacy that will never and could never happen again, not in the way it did back then. I think it's a beautiful, beautiful song.
Hi, Chris. This is Owen Parker. I was very excited on Beatleave, having seen the documentary. I don't or didn't really know much about Now and Then. I always presumed that Grow Old With Me was the third track, which George rubbished during anthology sessions and didn't want to do, and they hit a brick wall with. But when this came about, I had a quick listen to the Lennon demo a few months ago when this was mooted, and then didn't think much of it. I actually thought it might be a wind-up with the whole AI happening at the moment, some of which I like. There's a Grow Old With Me I do think is very good, that is, AI, et cetera, et cetera. And then this came out. I really annoyingly had to go into a meeting bang on 2 o'clock. So I was halfway through it when the person called me to go out in the lift to floor 5 where my meeting was. And I then went back to it afterwards. I was walking around King's Cross underwhelmed. I don't know what I thought it would be, but I suppose, can I be devil's advocate and say the Endless River Pink Floyd is more of a mood, a soundscape? It's not a great song, let's face it, and there's enough been said when people saying, well, if you didn't want it on Double Fantasy or it didn't even make it to Milk and Honey, I suppose it didn't even get to Milk and Honey stage of, you know, those in the studio, doing anything with it. And also going back to Pink Floyd, I find the slide more Gilmore-ish in the way Paul plays it than a nod to George, although it is slide, so it's a nod to George. I miss the I Don't Want to Lose You bit from listening to the demo, so I took the liberty of very quickly using some very, very budget Peter Jackson software, more high street Peter Jackson software. I stripped out Lennon's piano and vocal and did how I thought it could have gone into the I Don't Want to Lose You bit. And here it is. We love you. Like that being the B section, whereas at the moment they've got the Now and Then as a chorus sort of thing, which feels like just a gear shift away from the main bit. It more in your traditional Beatle Ticket to Ride day tripper form of ABAB. But what do I know? We've got more Beatles. Surely that's what the world needs, more Beatles. We've got more Beatles. I'll shut up.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for asking me to be part of this special day. It's half an hour, I think, maybe, since I first heard Now and Then. I didn't really stop to think what my expectations were, and I just wanted it to happen to me just as a new piece of music. But of course that's not really possible, because it's a piece of Beatles music, and I think a lot of people have said it's an emotional experience, and I just waited to see what emotions I had, and the emotions kind of just emotions that you have when you're at my time of life, about the passing of time, about what strange things like this that happened, that John Lennon could have just sat down to write a song that almost makes more sense at this point in the timeline than it, or it certainly is more powerful at this point in the Beatles story in our story than it could have been when he first wrote it, because it has this kind of baked into it, is this kind of prescience, this kind of sense that when you're, you know, with your the person you want to be with for the rest of your life, that time goes by quickly and you're already sort of reflecting upon it. It's strange to think that he was already reflecting upon the times he'd had with Yoko at such a young age, and that just becomes exponentially more powerful when all these years pass and what's happened has happened. Musically, I think Paul and Ringo have done, and Giles have done a fantastic job. I don't really care if it's Paul playing in the style of George, or if there are bits where it is actually George playing, because if I didn't know that that wasn't George, I wouldn't really question it. I don't think it makes a material difference to the sound you're hearing and how it makes you feel. There are some chord changes in there that are definitely sort of pregnant with the spook, that just kind of just really make your emotions sort of do a bit of a 360 degree turn. You don't really know a lot of the time whether or not you're about to laugh or cry. And the harmonies on the chorus are just really, really well done. Just, you know, it really just sounds like a labour of love. And it's closest companion piece, I guess, is Free as a Bird, because Free as a Bird also has that sort of sense of kind of an awareness of time passing. The great thing about these songs when they come out as infrequently as they do is that it is like finding a letter that from an old friend that was never sent. You can add to a correspondence, and I don't know how to assess this critically. I just sort of I just felt like I was just cocooned in this sense of well-being, this bittersweet sense of well-being, and it's just lovely to be around for somebody like this. Once again, thanks for asking me to participate in this, Chris. I hope this is useful, and I can't wait to hear what everyone else has to say. Take care.
Hi, Chris. It's Claire Shenton here, back down to earth after the release of Now and Then, and I just wanted to share some of my thoughts with you. First of all, I absolutely love it. I love the production. I love how Paul showed uncharacteristic restraint in his approach to it. His bass line is wonderful. The harmonies are beautiful. George's guitar is high enough in the mix to give it its platform, and I love it. Ringo's drumming is perfect and not obscured by production. And then we get to John's voice, which just absolutely kicks you in the heart when you hear it. And it sounds like it was recorded today. And the song sounds like it belongs to today and not some clunky pastiche of an era gone by, which would have been an easy pitfall for them. So I absolutely love it. I love the fact that it begins with a 1, 2, 3, 4, which bookends beautifully a career that is unparalleled. The opening cries of 1, 2, 3, 4, side one, track one of Please Please Me, and now the gentle 1, 2, 3, 4 of the intro to Now and Then, I think is just so poignant and wonderful. And I don't think it was in any way accidental. And I absolutely adore the strings throughout as well. They're a lovely nod back to previous eras without being too much of a parody, I think, as well. So really beautiful production. I love the fact that they got to tell their story. Many, many books have been written about, you know, the relationship between Paul and John. What did they actually think of each other? How they actually felt about each other? But truly, it is a love story. They loved each other. They were each other's, one of the most significant relationships each other had in their lives and ever will have. And I just think it's a wonderful opportunity to put all the theories to bed and hear the story from the horses' mouths. So really, it is a great song standalone as well. You know, it does sit beautifully within the Beatles canon. And I feel like we're lucky to have had the opportunity for them to bring this together in the way that they have. They were right to abandon it when they did, and right to pick it up again when they did, when the technology would serve John's voice well enough. So all in all, I think it's been a wonderful time to be a Beatles fan, and a glorious bookend to their career, and one which we're grateful for. So thank you very much.
So Now and Then, what a song. I think we should play it, don't you? Let's have a listen now.
How long will the Beatles come in? take a seat and we'll begin along with the Beatles and the Beatle about. Along with the Beatles, just ask us and we'll do anything along with the Beatles and the Beatle about. Cause we Beatle about like nobody's business. Soulful one, I'll sing the songs that make you cry.
I am Jump the Tonchin, one sardonic, gin and tonic makes me high.
I'm Joe Cat the quiet one, but just open your mind and I will make you free.
And I am Ringo, and no one listens much to me, cause I'm just Ringo. I play the drums and make the tea.
That's us with the Beatles, just ask us and we'll do anything, because we're the Beatles. We'll help you to find your diamond ring. Yeah, yeah, we're the Beatles. Oh yeah, we're the Beatles. Oh yeah, we're the Beatles. Yeah, yeah, we're the Beatles.
Well, that wasn't Now and Then, as you've probably guessed. That was Jeremy Lin, who is a wonderful comedian and a brilliant musician, and hopefully he'll be coming on soon. So let's hear what he thinks.
Hello, I'm Jeremy Lin. I'm an actor, comedian, writer and musician, and more often than not, none of the above. But anyway, I've been asked by Chris to give my reactions to my first hearing of Now and Then, the final Beatles song. I deliberately avoided all bootlegs or pre-existing versions, so I came to it absolutely fresh, and these are my initial thoughts, such as they are. First of all, I really didn't expect it to be in the minor key. It's in a sort of mournful A minor, which reminds me a bit of the Hard Day's Night era songs. It's also a little bit There's a Place from Please Please Me. I was expecting something a bit more celebratory, to be honest, so it's goes to prove the Beatles are still wrong-footing us, or me anyway, after all these years. It's a doleful, angular, unexpected tune, leans on the second and the, I think it's the fourth, I can't remember, I should know being a musician, but it's not the sort of obvious tune that you might expect. It's, John's voice is, gives you the shivers, it's slightly uncanny valley-ish, because there's computer generation, obviously, aiding the sound a little bit. I did, to be honest, I wanted a bit more pull on the vocals as well. But just, you know, whenever John does it, that sort of shivery melismata, glissando-y thing, which he does a couple of times in this, it gave me the shivers. I expected the chorus to go into the major, and it almost does. It sort of avoids it. Again, a bit reminds me of There's a Place, which is one of my favourite early Beatles songs. Lovely to hear a bit of slide guitar George, or is it George? I mean, I think I'm not quite sure it is, having watched the mini-documentary on Disney Plus. I think it may be a George tribute act performed by P. McCartney. So overall, I think my reaction is that I will love it. I'm not quite there yet, but it has been. It's that first tune has been going around my head. I've listened to it about three or four times in a row, and that first little hook has really got to my memory. It feels to me as if it would have worked better. Again, you know, who am I? But if this had been the second anthology song and Real Love had been released last, I think that, for me, that would have worked better. But then maybe it's appropriate that you get this very heartfelt, sad song. I mean, it is a sad song, and maybe that's what you need for the last Beatles song. Not a great summation, not a great the end style peroration, but one final look over the shoulder. Because I mean, this is the last. There's no more George, no more John. We'll never hear them again. you know, very possibly not much more Ringo. I mean, there'll be more Paul, obviously. But it's a sad farewell, really. And as I say, I will love it, probably in a couple of minutes. Anyway, thank you very much, and goodbye.
Hello, I am Camilla. I'm 26 years old, and I'm from Colombia. And this is the first time I ever get to hear a release coming from the Beatles. And I wasn't even alive when Anthology came out. So needless to say, I was incredibly excited, but nothing prepared me for all the feelings I felt while listening to Now and Then for the very first time. Listening to John's voice was like a hug to my heart, but also it was very, very, very sad. I think it was so well thought out, so well put together. The fact that you get all the elements that make them, you know, that make their music stand out and made them so iconic and their sound so characteristic and so different. Listening to the string arrangement, to the backing vocals, which sounds so beautiful. But to me, the most beautiful thing was to listen to John and Paul's voices again together. And the most beautiful thing for me about it is that they do not sound the same. It's, you know, a sound that you kind of remembered, but somehow it sounds different because now you get an 80-year-old Paul singing it and you feel the passing of time. And I think that is incredibly painful, but also incredibly beautiful. The fact that they're still connected after all these years. And I feel when you listen to it, you realize that the magic is still there for the four of them. There's still this beautiful connection. So I feel very, very lucky. I cried my eyes out. I've listened to it way too many times, and I hope I can continue to do so. I can't wait for the music video. And I just feel very lucky that I finally got the chance to listen to a Beatles song for the first time ever, to discover it along with the rest of the world. I'm very lucky to be a Beatles fan right now, and I'm very emotional for certain.
Hi Chris, it's Stuart McConey here. As you can probably hear, I'm out in quite a wild and windy London town in the West End. I've just left Broadcasting House. I've been doing the Drive Time show on Six Music, and I just played. Was one of the first people to play Now and Then, the last Beatles song as it's being billed. Who knows whether it really will. I think it probably will, won't it? And, well, reaction to it was almost uniformly positive, as you think from our listeners. And as for me, well, I loved it, and it's grown on me, even just hearing it a couple of times this afternoon, in that at first I thought, well, this isn't a track I don't think I'll go back to over and over again, but it's a moment. It's a hugely emotional moment, really significant moment, and like everyone else, I think I was really emotionally wrapped up in it, felt very moved, felt quite teary. But I've grown to actually start to really like it as a track, but obviously there are such emotional resonances about it. For me, when you hear the John of 40-odd years ago at his piano in New York, or the voice from that, duetting with his old friend, who of course has had 40-odd years of life that he didn't, or 40 years of life that he didn't in the region of that. So like older Paul and John, I guess, in the prime of his life, I found that duet and that melding of the voices incredibly moving, really, and I think a lot of people do. And what I would say about it is I really liked Free as a Bird, or I did at the time, because I think, like a lot of people, it was a really ghostly and eerie and moving moment. But I can hear now that Free as a Bird was much more of a Beatle pastiche. That's not a criticism of Jeff Lynne, but it does feel like a pastiche in a way that this doesn't. This feels like the work of a group. This was like a, if you see what I mean, a proper record. If that record, you know, not a pastiche, not a souvenir, not a bit of nostalgia, not a bit of trickery, but a real breathing, living record. And a good record. I'm not sure it's one of John's greatest songs, but I don't think that's the point, really, is it? And significantly, and a few people mentioned this to me on the radio, you know, corresponding with me while I was on the radio. I feel that just as Get Back came along when the world absolutely needed it, for which we salute the hero that is Peter Jackson, you know, I think the world needed Get Back with COVID and all the other things going on in the world. And it feels like, again, with all the stuff that is going down in the world and the darkness in the world, and when you listen to the COVID inquiry, someone's crossing the road, when you listen to the COVID inquiry and you hear the terrible stuff coming out of that, you just think, here were some lads who were an unalloyed force for good in the world, and everything that's good about this country and the world is kind of embodied in them. And it's just fantastic. It's like, again, when we needed it most, the Beatles are here to bring a bit of joy and optimism and creativity and light into the world.
Hello, my name's Sheila Redfern, and I'm a clinical psychologist and a lifelong Beatle fan. I can't really remember a time when the Beatles weren't in my life, and yesterday, when the new and last Beatles single, Now and Then, was released, I was thrown right back to my early teens, when my Beatle fascination probably hit its peak. That was then. They've been companions, almost like family members and friends throughout my life, and to me they've always been a source of pure joy. I could never get tired of the music, and there's something about their personalities that seems to bring everyone together in happiness to sing, laugh, or just muck about like they did. When I was in my early teens, my parents divorced and I felt a bit lonely, but the Beatles were there to cheer me up. And when I joined the Wings Fun Club and got a ticket to see Paul McCartney and Wings at the Liverpool Empire on the front row, I remember shouting to my mum in the bathroom, "Row A, Mum, Row A!" Both my mum and dad drove me there together. It was like they brought them back together in my life. We went with my friend Gina up to Liverpool from our hometown in Eastwood, Nottinghamshire, to see him. It was a long way, and I remember just driving over the Peak District to get there. It just blew my mind. I have such a strong memory of the trip, but also just the connection between me and my mum and dad, and then with each other as they stood outside the venue listening to Wings and waiting for me to burst out with my friend. My dad even nicked the poster from the Liverpool Echo stand, which read, "There's a Beatle back in town." That same year, 1979, I painted a giant mural on my bedroom wall, copying some of the artwork from Yellow Submarine that was Glove, plus work from my Beatles chord book at the time. It was all psychedelic and really brightly coloured. I was quite proud of it. It covered the whole wall and I'd gaze at it for hours listening to the newly re-released green-sleeved 45s from the Beatles. I think We Can Work It Out was probably the first one I bought. After I left home, my mum redecorated and covered it with wood chip paper, and then another layer and another layer of updated wallpaper after that, and I almost forgot about it. Sadly and unexpectedly, my mum died in 2020 during the pandemic, and shortly after that, with a great regret, me and my brother decided to sell our family home. And we had a hunch that the owner would like the quirky style of the old cottage, but saying goodbye to it was a huge wrench for me. It was also tied up with my mum and my childhood there. Now, I was listening to Now and Then and feeling incredibly moved by the lyrics about love and friendship and missing people. I started watching the film of making the song and an email popped up on my phone. It was from the lady who'd bought my childhood home and it had an attachment, a photograph. It was a picture of the mural. She'd stripped off the layers of wallpaper that same day that the song was released and wondered what this thing was. She called it a funky mural and wondered what it was all about. Was it significant to me? The Beatles coming back together and seeing that mural brought back to life a period of time when everything felt intricately linked with the Beatles, with my home, with my family. And I was back in my family home with my mum, remembering then and now, Now and Then.
Ah, it's Matt Everett. Hello, Matt.
How did you feel? How did you feel? Tell me about how you felt.
I love it. I love it. For me, the moment in the song is the bridge with Paul playing slide. It's just so beautiful. It goes off on such a strange tangent. With all the bits that have been removed from the original demo, this just soars, much like the guitar solo in Free as a Bird, where it goes off in a slightly different direction, changes key. It does the same here, and it's so touching, so moving. That was the moment I cried. It's beautiful. And the song as a whole, we all knew it was going to be mournful, anybody had heard it before, but it's like the sadness of it. They try to lift it, they're still thinking positive, despite the sadness of the song. And the highlight, another highlight of many, is when John and Paul are duetting, and you've got 37-year-old John and Paul in his 80s singing together. It's kind of reminiscent of Two of Us when they're singing together, but now they're they're missing each other. In Two of Us, they're saying, you know, two of us together. Here, they can never be together. And it's, heartbreaking. But I love it. What about you?
I mean, I even before we get to the music, I think the thing that affected me the most was, I mean, there's some really, really, really tough, horrible stuff happening in the world at the moment, really, that almost anyone is kind of emotionally affected by it. And it was like, and that stuff's obviously still happening. It hasn't stopped. But it felt like we all just had this communal experience of let's just experience something that's just built around love and joy. That's it. Let's just all have that moment together. And, you know, it doesn't happen very often when, you know, and not just Beatles fans, music fans and people that are just vaguely interested in musical culture or the Beatles. It's such a big deal. And it's like we all just sort of took a collective moment to listen to music that was made with care and love by people, in some of whom are gone, but had that relationship with the people that they played with. And we just stopped and enjoyed that. You know, it doesn't mean the awful stuff has disappeared. It doesn't mean that you know, hardship and suffering isn't out there. But it just felt we just paused for a moment, if we were able to, and just listened to a song at its most simple. And that's just everybody shared that experience. And I thought that was just enormously affecting to me. It was great. It was great.
Yes, it really reminded me. Somebody else mentioned that today. And it really took me back to when we were in the absolute height of lockdown, where everybody was like, oh, what is the point? And Apple put on a live stream of Yellow Submarine. So everybody watched it. And the particular point where they played All Together Now, and you literally saw the whole screen scrolling down with people in different languages, pretty well like it does at the end of the Yellow Submarine movie. All together now in all different languages. And it was just a real feeling of, oh, we're all together, you know, in this, we're all locked away. But this Beatles community, there's something so special about it. There's something so magical and powerful about it.
Yeah. It's kind of, it's weird to almost sort of talk about it as like, well, you know, structurally, was it exactly what you wanted? And was the production the way you wanted it to be? It's never going to be, a song can never be all that you... No one song can encapsulate how any one person feels about the Beatles. And you kind of want that to happen. But even with that, I was just blown away by it. I think it's just a beautiful... The ending, there's so many different elements to it. I think that one of the things that makes it feel like a Beatles song is that there's some... My brother, who's a sort of music producer, and the parents were just going, rimshots. Ringo's playing rimshots. We haven't heard it. Have you ever heard it? Just a little... Oh, my, the strings at the end, just the outro. That fill, that bit, that all there's all the little bits of magic in there. One of the best things about all their songs is that there's so many little beautiful moments within every song that isn't just, here's the melody, here's the drums, whatever. And it's got that to it. That's the thing, that one of the many things that I like about it. It's got lots of little moments of personality and character, and, like, you know, Paul's bass, he's clearly not, like, all over it like he is on, I don't know, Penny Lane or something. But you can tell he's got that beautiful melodic thing that he does, but he's holding back a little bit and letting the song breathe. And that in itself is a beautiful thing to hear. It's like there's so many parts of it, that I thought were fantastic.
Hi, Chris. It's Andy Bell from Ride. Thank you so much for asking me to comment on the new Beatles single, Now and Then. I love it. I've played it many times since yesterday. It's a lovely song that makes my heart feel heavier at the same time that it lightens it. First four lines are killer up there with John's very best melodies. So I'm familiar with John's earlier version, the demo, and I do love that recording. It's got a lot of lo-fi charm. There are overtones or harmonics in the piano, or just the recording in general, which make it seem like there's already strings on it. And there's things in the chorus, I'm not sure whether they're all still there, but they put me in mind of the Number 9 Dream kind of turnaround, that the sort of tempo changes that John does so naturally. But, you know, in saying that, the demo also does kind of meander around a lot, and sometimes it kind of drifts away from inspiration, and you can feel like he's kind of treading water a little bit with it. So I'm glad they didn't follow the demo exactly. They were, you know, Paul and Ringo and Giles, I guess, were adventurous enough to take it further, make some good decisions, and I'm glad they did, because it's gone more towards an authentic collaboration now, I guess, in the same way that a Beatles track would have worked back then. The act of finishing this song must have been an absolute tightrope between sensitivity to the original song and then daring to make changes. And I think, like I say, the decisions they've made have definitely made it better as an arrangement. They've tightened it up, but also they haven't overdone it, which was probably quite hard. It was probably quite tempting to just go all out with it. But you can hear Ringo's drumming, you can hear Paul's playing on the bass and his George tribute slide playing. The strong points of it are how held back it is, the tightening of the arrangement by the lads, and the lovely inspiration of the original song, which feels pretty much intact. So yeah, I love it.
Hey, Chris and Eggpod listeners. This is Jonathan Priedus from the Ranking the Beatles podcast. Just wanted to share my thoughts with everybody on Now and Then. Yeah, y'all, it's 2023, and we've got new music from the Beatles. What a brilliant day this is for us as fans. You know, I've had the pleasure to spend some time with this song today. Julia and I spent some time listening to it this morning, and then I've had it on repeat pretty much all day. I've got to say, it's really exceeded my expectations. I think after hearing fan-made versions of this, I think I was expecting something a bit more like a pastiche, but I'm so glad that that's not what this is. It feels more organic than Free as a Bird or Real Love. Even if for the most part, you know, John's the most upfront Beatle on it, you know, throughout it, I'm so glad they did the bit of work that they did on it in 95, because we get some of George on it, even if it's just on rhythm guitar. I'm glad we get to hear Ringo really play on it and not be quantized and snapped to a grid in kind of that Jeff Lynne production style, which, respect and love to Jeff. You know, Ringo really gives the song some movement and groove that I wasn't quite expecting it to have. Giles's score is just masterful. I think we really need to tip our hat, though, to Paul on this song. This is something that obviously was very, very important to him. So much so that he's been waiting almost 30 years to make it happen. I feel like this was created with a lot of love and respect and admiration for John and for George. You know, you can really see it on Paul's face in the short film. He's got a lot of emotion in his face and in his body language when he's overseeing the sessions for it. You see a lot of this also in Get Back, you know, when Paul's kind of dealing with everything that's going on there. You know, you can tell that this really means something to him, and I think it meant something to John also. I think they're both kind of connecting on this track, and it really comes across through it. It's got some real weight and beauty, and the whole thing just feels really personal and intimate. I'm really just so happy that we get to have this moment of excitement and happiness as fans, and that we get something so beautiful from this song. It's amazing, you know, to see this band really create the template for the evolution of a legacy act, especially one in which some members are no longer here. I think we owe a huge debt to Peter Jackson and his team. I truly think that the MAL software is going to change the face of record production in the future. You know, this whole thing is just such a great moment for us as fans, and it comes at a time, I think, when the world is such a dark and weird place. It's so nice that, you know, one more time after all these years, the Beatles are putting smiles on so many faces again. Smiles and a bizarre mixture of tears. I know the first time I heard this, I was definitely both crying and smiling at the same time, as I'm sure many of you were. So thanks again, Chris and Eggpod, for putting out the call for this and letting listeners and fans send in our thoughts. I hope everyone's loving the song and celebrating such a momentous occasion today. Peace and love to everybody. Have a good one.
Hello, it's Donna Reese here. Just trying to take in Now and Then. It's extraordinary on so many levels. You know, it's about my personal history with the Beatles, their history, what we know about them, what we know about Paul and John's relationship in particular, and the history of this song you know, leading up to this release. It's just so loaded with emotion. I just thought John's voice sounded so present. It was amazing. And when Paul starts harmonizing with John, I mean, that's the bit where I completely lost it. I thought all the Beatly flourishes, like the sort of swooping, subtle strings and Paul replicating George's slide guitar, were so beautifully done with so much care. And it could have sounded like a terrible Beatles pastiche, and it didn't at all. It was so beautifully constructed, the whole song, and I just thought it was amazing. And just tears, like, you know, these four lads that I've loved since I was young, very young. And it's just, you know, just like it's all coming out of my tear ducts, this overwhelming love I have for them. And yeah, it's never experienced anything like this before. Extraordinary. What a day. Amazing.
Hello, my name's Luke. And since 2 o'clock this afternoon, I've lost count at the number of times I've listened to Now and Then. Absolutely wonderful. And at the same time, quite an emotional experience. In the early 1980s, when I was 5, my father videotaped Yellow Submarine off the TV, and I watched it to death. Not only did this start my love of the Beatles, but it also started my love of music. Sadly, my father, Colin, passed away in May, so this is the one Beatles song that he's missed. And I'm very sad that he can't hear it, and that we can't talk about it. But I think the actual song is beautiful, it sounds like the Beatles, it's about love, and what more could we want? Lastly, thank you for doing the Egg Pod, it really is one of my favourite things. Cheers.
Hi, I'm recording this from Los Angeles, California. My name is Amy Pickard, and these are my thoughts on the new Beatles single, Now and Then, which is a fun sentence to say. As soon as I heard the title, Now and Then, I immediately thought of John's last words to Paul in the hallway of Dakota, which were, "Think about me every now and then, my old friend." So I was already emotional going in, and I wasn't expecting the song to be so melancholic. I still love it, though. I felt the lyrics in the song are a love letter to Paul, and if there's such a thing as closure, I would think John finally saying to Paul, "I know it's true, it's all because of you," gives it to him, or at the very least, some sort of validation. It was incredibly profound to hear now Paul singing with then John. And how fantastic that the software named Mal helped the Beatles now, just like the roadie Mal helped the Beatles then. I love the bass groove. I love the Liverpudlian emphasis on pronouncing the word return, which felt like a nod to their younger days. No, I'm not doing the accent. You're welcome. The ahs that reminded me of the song Because. And I almost wonder if Giles Martin was cheeky and grabbed a few of those from 1969 to slot into the Now song. I don't know. It's fun to speculate. Ringo's fills were just the best because they were so Ringo. Paul's vocal blending with John singing the lines, "Love You," it felt like they were singing it to each other. The pure Paul piano and strings, that familiar Paul acoustic strum, and his George-inspired guitar solo, it felt so melancholic and simple that it left space for George. I know everyone was thinking of George when that solo began. The single sounded like the Beatles. It didn't sound like ELO or Solo Fabs. I love the song that doesn't go where you think it's going to go, and that's very Beatles, and I just loved the ending. Now and Then is exactly what it says on the tin. It is reminiscent of the past, but it is also very modern sounding due to the cosmic magic these four humans have brought to us, and it's timeless for the future generations. No other band can time travel like this. But this is what blew my mind about John's intimate vocal. It's taken from him at the piano in that unselfconscious space of creation. And because of technology inspired by the Beatles, Peter allowed Paul to join with John in that sacred, magical space one more time in order to create a Beatles single. magical. And in closing, I believe it is no coincidence that Now and Then was released on the Day of the Dead, which is a holiday where many believe that the souls of the departed return to Earth. How beautiful to think of John and George returning today to reunite with Ringo and Paul and all of us here on Earth. Thank you, Peter Jackson. Thank you, Beatles. And thank you, Chris, for all your hard work.
Hi, Chris. It's John. It's John Higgs. And I'm just back from Resident Records in Brighton, where I bought it. I bought the 7-inch. And it was quite an experience. There's no sort of displays or racks or anything like that. You had to go and find the 7-inch section, which is not a big part of a record shop. And you flick through the ABC thing. And it was just sitting there with all these other records. And it was the rarest of modern types of vinyl, the best. It was black vinyl, that thing you can never find in 2023. I love black vinyl. It was just right. And there was something about the experience of just buying the 7-inch record that brought the whole thing back full circle. It was like when Love Me Do on the other side was first in the racks and people would go and buy that sort of black vinyl. If this had happened in, you know, the CD era or the, you know, the iTunes downloads era or something like that, it wouldn't have had the same sense of completion. But, you know, something about the Beatles and the sort of the cheap democratic nature of vinyl that I associate them together in a way that, you know, the £140 box set for the Red and Blue albums, somewhat not right about that for me. But getting it on vinyl was amazing. And the vinyl, and oh God, the video as well. I just seen the video. And I think it could be, you know, as important, even more important than Get Back in terms of what Peter Jackson has done for the story of the Beatles, in that, you know, the end of the Beatles used to be the Let It Be film, and it was like sour, and it was like Let It Be, it's like it's done, like let's move on. It was all wrong. And to end on a film like that, to move from that sourness to, you know, Now and Then I Miss You, it's very, very different. And the way the ghosts start to appear in the video is incredibly moving and very hard to process, really, for me still. I particularly loved the shots of them recording the strings, because I knew that the musicians hadn't been told it was a Beatles record. They didn't know that, you know, the ghost of John Lennon was in the room with them, and the music they were playing had ultimately sort of come from him. And then to see in the video, there he is with them, being funny. That was the important thing. When it started, and there was a shot of John like looking out at the sunsets, and I thought, oh, okay, it's going to be that sort of tone, is it? That's where they're going with this. And thankfully, no, after that, it was not that. It was, you know, mischief and cheekiness and, you know, because people who aren't with us, they just exist in our memories. They can be very alive in those memories. And that's kind of what we saw, and seeing the Beatles at different ages all together. That's sort of how they are now. That's how they exist, all jumbled up in our heads. But it was so tragic and upsetting, really, as it's sort of getting towards the end. Because, you know, we've all processed the breakup of the Beatles, and, you know, we've all got over it in a way and sort of moved on. And to sort of have them back it's against nature. It's an absolute miracle, but it's just like 4 minutes and 8 seconds. And then we lose them again. And we find ourselves at the end of that video, especially just like grieving for them again and going through all that. We've lost them again. And there's something to do with the way that they were getting younger and younger at the end, as if we're losing them, as if they're disappearing. And it's, you know, to get them back, but to get them back for such a short period of time. Oh, well, that's as they say, all the feels, isn't it? I'm sure I've rambled enough. I'll speak to you soon, Chris, I hope. Take care, man.
It's been really difficult to formulate a balanced opinion about Now and Then. There is so much emotion wrapped up in its release. Obviously, the media have been buzzing and it has pervaded the national conversation. For us, the Beatles fans, the slightly obsessive bunch of Fab Four lovers, we want to dissect every bar, every note. Yet, to hear John's voice return to us so crystal clear makes rational thought impossible. At first listen, it seems a fairly standard refrain, but on repeated plays, the melody begins to wind through your thoughts, the strings pluck at your heart, and the slide guitar seeps into your soul. As I said, rational thought is impossible. But who cares about rationality? This is a new track, Fresh Fab Four, a song to revive our spirits in dark times. So forget about critical analysis. Leave the nitpicking behind. We have John, Paul, George and Ringo. We have the Beatles. And we have love.
Hi Chris, it's Tim Worthington here from the Lots of Familiar podcast and finding out where the Ringo isn't even the best drummer in the Beatles joke originally came from fame. I'm not actually going to give you my impressions of Now and Then because A, everyone's going to be talking about that, and B, it's not really aimed at me in the same way that the new mix of Love Me Do on the B-side is. So instead, I'm going to be talking about Love Me Do. If I'm honest about it, I was kind of excited about that and really trepidatious and almost dreading it at the same time because with the master tape having gone missing so early, I mean, probably just after the single was out, it's really, in its original form, the last link that we have, the last sort of direct connection we've got to where the Beatles came from, that long-lost black and white world that they emerged from when they were just another band. You know, it's our only remaining connection to that rather than what they became. It's the one last aspect of the career that hasn't been in any way retrospectively enhanced, either in terms of its mix or its reputation, and so there's a lot riding on it, really. So I was approaching it thinking, what am I going to think of this? And I'll be honest with you, I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. They've done a really good job of making it sound like, I would say specifically, it doesn't sound necessarily like a Beatles stereo mix of the era. It sounds more like the sort of stereo mixes you got on other Merseybeat Outfits albums, like, say, for example, Jerry and the Pacemakers made me think of. So they've very much gone for a George Martin style of mix, but the kind of mix that he would have done, as I say, for another Merseybeat act. And it reflects the fact, really, that at that stage, they were just another band. Not even just another band, they were just another Merseybeat outfit. And I think capturing that is an absolute masterstroke. It's an absolute genius idea. And even though they haven't tried to make it into something new, it's just astonishing that even after all this time, that one simple recording all those years ago is still throwing up new details. I mean, I'm convinced I heard things in this mix that I haven't noticed in Love Me Do previously. I'm absolutely convinced in at least part of it, there are sort of remnants of mixed out hand claps as though they'd been considered part of it. And either they weren't picked up properly on the mic or they were deliberately mixed out at some point. And also, I really love the way that while they've kept the harmonica, you know, they've kept the sound really pleasingly raw like it would have sounded at the time. There's been no attempt to sort of clean that up. I love that in a really endearing way, it does show up John's limitations as a harmonica player. I don't think we'd actually hear that fluff before, but that makes it so much more human. You get a sense of what it was like for them recording it. You know, this was their big moment, could have gone one way or the other. All that nervousness they must have been feeling, and it's captured in just that one little mistimed misnote. And in fact, it does actually sound almost like you're in the studio with them. This is the right way to approach sort of updating old material by not adjusting it to modern standards, just recapturing how it sounded at the time, but even better. And I think it's brilliant. It could have been a disaster and it turned out absolutely fantastic. And now can we please, please have Carnival of Light, and can we have it premiered on Sounds of the 60s on Radio 2 so Tony Blackburn can follow it by saying, bit of a different sound there from the boys.
Hi, Chris. Thank you for giving us this space to talk about the Beatles Now and Then. My name is Jackie Gibbons, and I am going to be no different from everybody else, okay? I was deeply moved. Moved to tears, very surprisingly, more tears than what I thought. I thought I was going to be ready, but no, I guess I wasn't.
But now just the sight of that Now and Then cover, you know, at the angle there, I'm moved to tears. I mean, just sitting here right now talking about it, I mean, I feel ridiculous. I feel vulnerable. And you know what? It's that emotion is what this is all about. That's my take on it, is, you know, the emotions that is conveyed, number one, by John's voice. When I first heard it, just like hit you right between the eyes, right in the gut, right in the heart. Okay, he's right there in the room with you. Okay, so raw, just like he always was, okay, and now here he is again, and standing right next to him is, singing right next to him is old man Paul's voice, for God's sake, which is just right. It's the right notes and everything, it's right there, it's just the right volume, it's just right there. It's almost like the voices are caressing each other, the complimenting even now. Making that, hitting that note, that special Beatle note, it still happens. It still touches you. Thank God that they waited. Thank God they waited until now to be able to do that voice, the sound, justice. Must have been hard for them to wait, but I'm so glad that they did. Now I can almost imagine how difficult it must have been, how much they said, okay, we got to do this right. It has to be just right. How much care they took, okay? And it shows, and you can tell that they care, how much, you know, and that's what we feel. That's what I've always felt, you know, how much they care about each other, that charisma, that magic, all of the emotion, the feels, you know, in they're all felt at one time, you know, wistfulness, sadness, you know, passion, joy, hope. It says it all. I mean, that song, them, they're saying it all and putting it all on the line. They're lifting each other up. They're turning each other on in every moment. And that's what we respond to. And thank God for them. I mean, I'm just in love with them and will always be. Thank God for the Beatles.
Tell me about the build-up for you then. Tell me about how it's been over the past couple of weeks.
Oh, gosh, a couple of weeks. It's been a long while. Yeah, I think a lot of people knew it was coming. It's, I think, the marketing, the Capitol with McCartney albums and Apple with Beatles stuff, they're so good at this. They're so good at building up the excitement. What I love about it is they know that Beatles fans will do all the work. All they need to do is just make a few, couple of comments, and Beatles fans will pick up on it. It will go on social media and, you know, we will just go crazy looking for clues. Do you know what? I spent about an hour the other day when we saw the rear cover of the Now and Then single with the cuckoo clock. And I was sort of enlarging it and scrolling in because there's a number 40 in there that shouldn't be in there. Obviously, John died at 40, looking for clues. And I think, hang on, how old am I? What am I doing here? But I'm just sucked into this. And you can't help yourself. Well,
did you say Peter Blake clock? Is that what it's been decided that it is, the clock on the back cover? Sorry, I think.
I don't know. It just reminds me of a cuckoo clock. I don't know what it is. Right. It's just like a load of tape measures and an old key. But yeah, There's a lot of numbers on there, and it dominoes. It just looks like it. Who's that guy who did Masquerade, the book, back in the 80s?
Oh, yeah, Kim, whatever his name is, yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's probably more information to come about the clock, I believe, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Maybe there is, which is interesting.
Oh, okay. I know you can't say anymore. I won't ask.
But I mean, it's been, I don't know, that sort of, oh, it's very, you know, talking about the sort of unity of these things. You know, it's been all the radio stations, it's been brilliant to see, like, you know, Six Music, who I do stuff for on Radio 2, who I do stuff for, but like everybody coming together, you know? It's the great leveler, isn't it, I suppose?
Do you know what? One of the most moving things so far throughout all of this was, of all people, Ronan Keating, who I could probably name a few songs. He always comes across as a really lovely bloke. But when they did the promo video last night on The One Show, again, the first time I've seen The One Show, but hey. And right at the end, he was almost in tears, and he was supposed to do a link. Okay, right, now we're going. And he couldn't talk you know, it reaches so many different people. You don't expect...
This is it, isn't it? It's that thing where you are... You put your own... I mean, if you're as obsessed by their work and their story and their music and everything as you and me are, you know, it's how you feel about your life and your relationships and the world and everything is kind of interwoven with the Beatles. So when you hear Lennon singing Now and Then, yes, he's singing Now and Then. He's singing about Yoko. He's singing about his own life. And maybe he's singing about Paul, but you are feeling that maybe that's it. And he's everything he's singing, you're relating it to your life as well as knowing what he's singing about. You know, it's that. I think it was a Paul Simon quote, wasn't it? It was like, oh, the listener finishes the song. The listener really completes the work, you know, which is a really, I think that's a very good way about thinking. We all hear differently. You know, I hear Beatles songs and get all obsessed by the tambourine, as you know. Other people don't even hear it. It's an individual thing. So I think that's a really lovely element of it, is that everyone's going to take their own... Everyone has their own way of listening to it and what it means to them. And people will have not known anything about the story at all. You know, people like you and me can sort of wang on for ages about all the intricacies of the Beatles story, and we get a lot of joy from those things, and other people won't know anything about it and just listen to it as a song, and they'll get something out of it that will be hopefully valid and wonderful as well. So yeah, it's it works on lots of levels, man. But I'm just really happy. I'm happy the track's out there. I really like the artwork. I know there's been people talking about it. I think it's different and interesting, and I think it's something that we've talked about. I don't think you can... Had it had like sort of 60s psychedelic artwork in it, it would have been like, well, no, it's the same thing. You can't, you know, and they've chosen, like, I mean, Ed Rushka's got a sort of certain history behind him. He's certainly established, but it's unexpected and it's different. It's like, well, that's what you love about the band. One of the many things is you love the fact they're unexpected and different and challenging and artistic and creative and don't do the same thing again and again. So when they do that, do something different and surprising, don't moan about it. That's why you love them, you know? It's like, yeah. I think it's oh yeah, I wasn't expecting that cover. Yeah, that's the point of the band. Of course you weren't expecting it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what they do.
I dug out my my CD singles collection from, I think, gosh, was it the 90s? But you look at the CD singles collection, the covers for that, and back in the 70s and 80s, when they had the sort of green things, and yeah, about a certain era would have one photo. Most of the Beatles singles, in fact, in the UK, I think it was only Strawberry Fields from there on that they actually had covers. The Beatles UK singles covers, if they had one, aside from the 60s, were pretty shit. So this is good.
This is great. I just, yeah, and I also love... My brother just sort of posted a thing on his Instagram account, kind of like with a sign of his bank account. and then the pictures of the red and blue in the various formats, going like, yep, had to do it. But I like the fact that, you know, people are, oh, it's a lot of money. Well, you know, then don't spend it, it's fine. You know, no one's making you buy these things. You know, you go out for, you know, dinner with some friends and you drop a certain amount of money, and that's just enjoyable and the thing you eat and drink and off you pop. You know, this is a record on a different format, maybe in coloured vinyl, in a box or a 7-inch or whatever. You know, it's something that you choose to take pleasure from. You want to spend money on it, you'll get pleasure from it. Go for it. And they're doing that, and they're giving you the opportunity to buy these amazing formats. I didn't get a cassette. I'm gutted. I didn't get a cassette.
Oh, have they sold out?
Yeah, they've sold out. Cassettes are gone. But anyway, I haven't even got a cassette player. It doesn't fucking matter. But
could
anyway,
you not do? I think we had a conversation on an old episode. Oh, that was it. Because I mentioned once I met George Martin at Abbey Road.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to get an autograph. And I only had a paperback version of his book. And you were saying, yeah, that's pretty shit. You know, it's like you turning up with a TDK. You know, I've recorded Abbey Road on this. And I've written it all out in pencil just in case I want to rub it out.
Can you sign it for me?
Can you sign that?
Yeah. Oh, bless. Yeah, but I think it's a beautiful track. I think it's been beautifully played. Hearing them play together is great. And, you know, if you're going to get all uptight, it's only the same as... And it is, you know, they would give demos to each other. They would play stuff, you know. Some of them would go and work on a song when the other one was in another studio or doing something else. You know, it's a Beatles song. What more do you fucking want? Like, if you don't like it, nobody is forcing you to listen to it. It's okay. No one's going to be upset. Just go and do something else.
Yeah.
But I think it's wonderful. I think how they've done it's been wonderful. They could have like dragged it out for like months and months and months, this whole build-up, and they did it quick. Like, here's the announcement. A week later, here's the track, which is no time at all in the music industry. Normally be like, you know, Artist X is going to, oh, we're gonna tease the first track for 6 months, and me, you know. And it was like, no, we're just going to, it's a massive press release. Here's everything. You're going to hear it next week. We've still got the video to go, which is lovely.
You've seen the video.
I haven't seen the video. Like everyone else, I watched the kind of making of film last night, which was approximately 7¾ hours too short for me.
Yes.
I was really settling into like getting stuck into Ringo and George's hats in 95.
Yeah.
Like just brilliant. Crazy hippie dads. Love them so much. Yeah. So I just think it's been brilliant. And I keep listening to it. And I've played it to my daughter who's 5. And she's singing along with it already, and she doesn't know the story. She just has been singing along with it, and that'll do, I think, won't it? That'll do.
It certainly will. Matt, thank you so much. We're planning something, aren't we? So
yeah,
we'll be in touch.
We are. I'm going to get off now and stop my yakking and let other people yak away. But hello, all egg podders. It's really enjoy speaking to you, Chris, and I enjoy everybody else's interactions in the world of EggPod. So hello, everybody. Glad you like it. If you don't, doesn't matter. Go and do something else. I love it. Take care, man. Lots of love. I'll speak to you soon.
Bye, Matt.
Bye, mate. Bye.
Hello, Chris. My name is Emma, and I'm just giving my reaction to Now and Then. I listened to Now and Then a few times yesterday, and I was thinking, yeah, I do really love this. I really like it. And interestingly, this morning I've just cycled to work and back, and I've just been humming it all morning. So I think that's probably a good sign, isn't it? I wanted to say I'm 50. I was born in 1973, so I'm the sort of generation after the Beatles. And they've, as I'm sure most listeners to EggPod, I'm sure it's the same story. I've sort of been a fan since childhood, and I've had a sort of Beatlemania phase of my own in the late 80s, which was very out of sync with my friends at the time, and more recently with Get Back. But they've kind of always been there. And the reason I'm saying that is just because I think that definitely informs my reaction to Now and Then, which was a very emotional reaction yesterday. I didn't expect to love it as much as I did, and I found myself crying listening to the Craig Charles show in the afternoon as he played it. Sort of sat on my own having my lunch and burst into tears. And I think that's just because of all the emotion that goes with the passing of the years and the decades, you know, with the music that you love. And of course, with the Beatles, there's the, you know, everything about what happened to John and the tragedy of that. And I think there's quite, I get the feeling a lot of people are, I don't know, there's something of a, not, it's not a tribute to John, of course not, it's a, you know, it's about all four of them, but I think there's something lovely in the way Paul is handling the Beatles' legacy and kind of putting John's vocal centre stage, I suppose, on this, or at least kind of giving that space for that vocal, that incredible, that incredible sort of rescued vocal to come shining out. And I think that's really lovely. And I think, yeah, I think there's kind of, I've always felt for my generation, sort of growing up with loving the Beatles after John was killed, it's kind of still unbelievable sometimes. And I think there's something lovely about the way all this is being done now. It's, I don't know, wrapping it all up very beautifully. Anyway, to go to the actual record, John's voice has just always been something I've loved so much in the Beatles music. I love it when he's kind of wild and raw and sexy. I love it when he's kind of fragile and gentle, and to hear that being so beautifully done on the record, the way that kind of came out so clear, was very moving. I think musically it's kind of, the whole thing is just very sort of, you know, competent, and it's not breaking any barriers, but I don't think anyone was expecting Tomorrow Never Knows. And I think it's, yeah, again, it's been done clearly with a lot of love and careful thought about how to do it. And I thought the strings are nice, quite a lot of strings, but yeah, well done. And I really loved the actual using of the harmonies from Abbey Road, I think from Because, and maybe Here, There and Everywhere as well. I thought that was a really kind of,
yeah, a lovely sort of Abbey Road-esque flourish towards the end. And of course, just hearing John and Paul sort of singing together, Paul quite low in the mix, very bittersweet. So yeah, this fan who didn't actually expect to like it that much is very happy. I think it's lovely. I'm not sure if it's a real Beatle record or not. I don't think that matters. I think it's a tribute kind of to the Beatles by the Beatles, and I think, you know, why shouldn't Paul and Ringo do that? So yeah, and thanks for doing this, Chris. I hope this is useful. And I think we need a campaign to get Peter Jackson onto the Star Club tapes, which I know is not the point of this at all. All right, thank you. Bye.
So I listened to Now and Then on Six Music with Craig Charles, and I've only listened to it twice now because Craig Charles played it twice on the radio. I've not went on to anything else to listen to it again. I think as soon as I've done this, I will listen to it again and again and again and again. So, yeah, stunned and happy and joyful and teary. Those are probably words that a lot of people will use. As soon as it started, then the counting came on, I was like, yes! And a big smile came across my face because I just thought it's so brilliant for them to add in the counting. They've always been a band that includes the fans in the in-jokes. And so it always feels like we're part of the gang too. And also I like it when they just give a little wink to us in those ways. And even though as well, I mean, John's voice, even though I saw the film on the One Show yesterday about the making of the song, and I'd heard John's voice coming out clear as anything, when it came on in the song, I sat up and gasped aloud because it still surprised me to hear him so clear and amazing, and I don't know why it surprised me, but it still did. It shocked me, and the fact that his voice sounds so vulnerable and fragile yet strong and clear, and he was clearly singing it really well to himself, even though it was just a demo with all those little vocal flourishes that he did there, and I love those little flourishes. And I don't know how, but like, I don't know how the Beatles do it, where they encompass everything, like the thing that they're singing about and its opposites at the same time. But that's what they managed to do. And this song is, it was heartbreaking and it was elegiac, but it was also really celebratory and joyful at the same time. And so full of love as well, which, you know, is the Beatles all over. And it also made sense to me that even though, you know, John's voice is from the 70s and it is quite fragile, but the fragility in Paul's voice and Ringo's voice as well, like, I'm glad it was, like, it's the old man voices. It seems right that it is the Beatles as they are now, rather than, you know, trying to make it sound as if the records that they made back in the 60s. It's right that it has the time going past for it. I'm sorry, I'm not being very I'm not being very articulate, but it's hard to be, I suppose, when you first hear something. And I loved Ringo joining in the backing vocals. As soon as his voice came into it, that made me happy as well. And the little bit of electric rhythm guitar in the second and third verses, those little details that the Beatles always put in their records. And Paul's tribute to George Slide's guitar solo, as soon as that came in as well, that's a proper lump in the throat moment. And the strings, gorgeous. And Ringo's cymbal crashes, those, they just lifted the song in moments where you needed that sort of, that goose pimple moment. Oh, I have to listen to it again, because there's tons that I've not talked about and I've already rambled for too long. Anyway, I'm going to listen to it again. See you later.
Hi, this is Phoebe Lord from Another Kind of Mind podcast. My thoughts upon hearing Now and Then today are, I'm happy for Paul, for all of the families. I think this probably helps bring closure, not just to Paul, but probably all of them. I'll be honest, as far as the production goes, I loved the original demo so much. But that demo was so sad, so painful, and so hopeless. And knowing that at some point John wrote, "I'm still in love with you" on the lyric sheet, which I just found out yesterday, makes it even harder to process everything he was going through. Their story is so painful, but I understand that Paul couldn't just do a cover of this sad song. So it makes sense to me that he tried to take some of that pain out of the song. And to relieve some of that sadness musically just felt like the right thing to do. Feels very poetic because it's his way of saying to John, "I'll love you forever." And to speak it out loud, and this is how we're going to end our story so that there won't ever be any doubt ever again. So that's what I think about Now and Then.
Hello, my name is Ian Lee, radio presenter, TV presenter, you know, all of that stuff. I have been asked by I Am The Egg Pod to record my thoughts and my reactions after hearing Now and Then, the new song, the final song by the Beatles. Well, I haven't heard it yet. It's 12:15. It comes out in under 2 hours. I'm going to be working at 2, so I won't get to listen to it until 3. But I just wanted to share how excited I am. I saw the 12-minute film yesterday. I watched it on YouTube. I was in tears. That moment of silence just before Lennon's vocals kicked in, powerful stuff. I haven't listened to his demo because I don't know that song, and I want to hear it fresh. I am so excited. I am so moved. I'm so thrilled. I've got boys who are nearly 14 and 12. They weren't alive when Free as a Bird and Real Love came out. Two songs which I absolutely love, by the way. And I'm really excited that they're alive and are going to hear a new Beatles song. So I'll take a little break and then I will get back to you when I've heard it. I could come back saying it's awful, couldn't I? Oh, man. I've just heard it. You know what? There's a lot of stuff going on for me right now. You know, a lot of tough stuff, some health stuff, some family stuff. And that is exactly what I needed to hear. Brand new Beatles song. Oh, God. Let me just get the stuff I would have liked differently out of the way. I would have loved to hear Paul and Ringo more in the vocals. I would have loved to have heard that. I would have loved to have heard that. That's a small thing. The bass, the strings. Lennon's voice. Right. Yeah. That's the final Beatles song. God. Well, that was a thing. Right, time for me to go on social media and read all of the lovely things that people have written about it.
So, thanks everybody for sending in your thoughts. What a time to be alive. The last Beatles song, as somebody said before, "You Know My Name, Look Up the Number," was traditionally the last Beatles song. But you can choose between the two. That's the joy of the Beatles. There's so much music there. It's been a pleasure doing this. Thank you so much, and all the best. Bye. Hey!